I'm Gab. He's Jules. Just round about 72 hours to the Super Bowl. Not that I'm nervous or whatever. Sorry, I'll move on from that. My thoughts are elsewhere.
Go Eagles.
Go Birds. Go Birds, of course. It is blue skies over West London. Very much so. Less so, perhaps, mixed skies over Manchester United. We'll be talking about their game against Leeds. So much else going on. Real Madrid advancing to the final Club World Cup. Yes, it's a big deal. Will they play Al Hilal? Also a big deal. Big deal to us. Big deal to many people.
Yeah.
Maybe not to you and your little island, little shut-in world, whoever you are. And of course, Paris Saint-Germain. Sorry about that. But I promised we would start at Old Trafford. United going into this game with obviously a number of guys out. McTominay's out. Eriksen's out. Casemiro suspended. Yeah. Antony out. However, what really struck me about this game was everything goes so smoothly for Leeds at the beginning. Within a minute, the pride of Baveno on the shores of Lake Maggiore, Willy Gionto puts them in the lead.
Great goal as well, yeah.
And then they get a second goal early in the second half. Everything is smiling. And Leeds are supposed to be in turmoil. Jesse Marsh is gone. They have this dude on the bench. And I'm blanking with that name. I'm sorry, but he's the former England futsal coach. Yeah. With all due respect, nothing wrong with that. But he's obviously as interim as you
get. Chris Armas is there as well, to be fair. Like, as in, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. No, Chris Armas is on the bench. You know, move over, Sir Alex.
Like the Jesse Marsh continuity. Kind of thing.
But, and then United claw their way back in. Marcus Rashford again. And I think for me, if I'm a United fan, the biggest takeaway that makes me smile, Jadon Sancho coming on and scoring.
Yeah, a lovely goal as well that he took really, really well. It's great to see him. The celebration, I think you could tell how much this means to him coming back after. What he says is a difficult time. I mean, I think what was it? He was just not in the right place to play, I think physically and mentally. And now he's slowly coming back because I think a few people thought that maybe he could start this game considering the players missing. It was probably wiser from Ten Hag and the right call to leave him on the bench and Garnacho started and to be fair, did well. And then there was time for Sancho when you needed something a little bit different. And again, against low blocks, When Sancho is on his game, then that's the kind of differences that he can make because he's so good in tight spaces with a lot of people and he took his goal really, really well. And United could have gone and win that game. In the end, I think it would have been harsh on Leeds because they fought hard.
It's a fair result.
They played well. United had, I think, 25 shots or something, but the XG is just 2, so where they are, really. But I thought it was a cracking game of football with a lot of intensity.
Which, of course, viewers in the United Kingdom didn't get to see, which is odd, but well, you know, whatever. We're going to look a little bit more closely at the game. Obviously, for United, there's going to be some level of regret for Ten Hag because they could have pulled even with Manchester City, at least temporarily, and that was games in hand, all this
it's
stuff.
Another opportunity.
But other big story is we have a date, February 17th, is when the Rain Group was handling the sale. They want the bids. We've told you before.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter because, you know, they can say no, they can get a bid from the outside. They're not bound to do this. But big news is that supposedly Qatari investors who aren't linked to the Emir of Qatar are ready to offer. And they value the club at somewhere between 4.1 and 4.5 billion, less than many people thought. Jules, we spent time in Qatar. You're familiar with the Qataris as well.
Yeah.
The story is that these people have no ties whatsoever to QSI and the Emir of Qatar.
Yeah.
Given how small Qatar is it possible that there are investors who have no ties?
I don't believe so, but maybe it is. Right now, even if it's a rich country for the Qatari, for the, you know, the nationality of the Qatari who have the nationality who live there, I really believe it's impossible to put a 4.1, 4.5 billion bid for Manchester United without the royal family, the Emir, and the money that is in the fund, really, of the royal family involved. But maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe I'm cynical. But
we're going to talk about the implications of this, and some of the other runners and riders, potentially, in a minute. Also, from the Leeds perspective, going back to Jesse Marsh being sacked, and we're going to delve into that more. First thing, though, off the top that strikes me is, if you sack somebody, surely you've made plans to replace him. And yet, again, we see this. Carlos Corberan at West Brom, supposedly the first choice, he said no.
Yeah.
Iraola Arrayo also saying no. And now it feels like they're scrambling around. What?
I know, but I think you've got a short list when you get rid of a manager, like when you lose a player and you want to replace him, but then you still, you're not guaranteed that those guys are going to say yes. I think it's, yeah, ideally you would have a plan
in place. But in the real world, you talk to them beforehand.
I know, but it's also difficult, I think, to do that. Maybe they were just to be convinced, thinking, yeah, of course they're going to agree to come to Leeds, Premier League club, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't. Yeah. Was it the right timing to sack Jesse March when there's an international break coming? Not in that.
In March.
Ago. Yeah, in March. Maybe.
As I understand, I know you're not supposed to go and approach another club's manager, blah, blah, blah. And obviously, Corberan and Iraola have jobs.
Yeah.
In the real world, we generally know what happens. In the real world, unless there's an international break coming and I'm going to take, you know, a lot of time to do a search or whatever, if I don't have time for it, I speak to the person's agent. I speak to them too, secretly, yeah, surreptitiously. Like Arsenal did with Arteta, remember that? Yeah. And like they snuck into his house and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And weirdly, the Sky Sports News cameras were there. How funny. I wonder how they knew. Anyway, did this not happen here? Or do we think it was...
I don't know,
they
maybe.
Speak to Corberan and then Corberan says, hey, Corberan, hey, West Brom. Or what's the guy's name? Guo, is that his name? The owner?
I don't know.
Whatever. Yeah. And I say, look, I got this offer from Leeds.
Yeah, yeah.
You
maybe.
Want to give me a new contract? Since we were in the bottom three, right? Yeah. And now we've had this run and we're what are they? Six. They're close to the playoff. They're in the playoff
yeah,
spots
the playoff
now.
Spots, yeah. Even if it's very tight in the championship, as producer Freddie always right. says. You know, it's but yeah, maybe that happened. Maybe the plan was not to sack Jesse March just then, and then that defeat at the weekend made like, okay, I've had enough now. And
but that means making an emotional decision.
Yeah,
and you don't make emotional decision. You shouldn't make emotional decisions.
Okay, but someone with 25% win ratio in you know since arriving at the club, I think you can make an emotional decision because I think clearly there were issues in that team.
It's not about win ratio.
No,
it's about points per game.
Points per game, but even that is very low. Even that is very
it's
low.
It's lower than you would want it to be given
exactly.
the quality
so
of the
players.
So
maybe they just thought, you know what? There's no point keeping him in now. We gave him a bit more time than even with... I don't know. There's a lot of things can happen while you make the decision and then... But then you're right. Where I agree with you that it looks... It's a bad look to like... It seems that now they're like, okay, where do we go now? Because the two guys that we spoke to, who by the way... As good as they're doing with their current team now, it's a very different context to Leeds, to the Premier League, to like, you know, I'm not really sure in the situation that Leeds are right now in the Premier League that those two guys were the best choices. But yeah, it looks like they don't know where to go now. And they're struggling and they'll be like, uh-oh, okay, well, so what's next now?
Which
is never a good look because you don't look in control.
Well, which is odd because obviously there's been a lot of praise for Andrea Radrizzani with what he's done with the club, getting back up and whatnot. And obviously the other owners are the 49ers people, right?
Yeah.
Who, you know, oh, analytics, smart, planning, blah, 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 funds, look, you know. I mean, they don't give it the big one like some other American owners do. But, you know, obviously it's a very well-run, well-respected franchise. So you are kind of surprised that they find themselves in this situation. The other thing is, if you're going to use analytics and you're going to go and evaluate and blah, 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 I still feel if you're going to sack Jesse March, my time to do it was in January when you still maybe could have sweetened the carrot a little bit for Corberan and Iraola or whoever you want to bring in and say, look, you know, because they spent, what, $30 million on Jorginho Rutter.
Yeah.
They got Wolber. They got
McKennie.
They got Weston McKennie, and I think they got somebody else as well. So, in the end, this is an investment north of $50 million, right?
Yeah, yeah, more than that, even I think.
So, surely, you know, you would have, if you're a new manager, like, I'd like to have some input on this investment. This is the part which, to me, doesn't add up, right? How, you know, one game in February after the window closes, boom, you lose to Nottingham Forest, and, you know, sure, it's a direct opponent, but whatever. And all of a sudden, you turn the page. Does that make sense? Is this how you would run your club?
That's a good question. No, probably not. I do think that the players they signed are good young players, and I think that you can work with them. And yeah, they're a certain profile, but I think the argument saying like, oh yeah, but you know, those guys were for March, and then someone like is coming and might not want them. I don't think it's valid here because they're good. They're really good young players. They would work really well in the Premier League. So I don't think the why did they sack March after the transfer window, after investing that money for players for him?
No, sorry, let me amend that, Jules. March has a very distinct way of playing, right? Which we know from Salzburg and Leipzig, right? It is not identical to the way Corberan and Iraola play, right? So if you're considering these other guys who have different profiles, you might sign players that suit the football that they want to play.
I think McKennie would work with them too. I think Ruto works with them too. I think Wobel works with them too.
Yeah, but how about letting them decide it?
Yeah.
That's the only thing.
No, true.
That's the only thing I would
that's
say.
That's very true. That's also true.
With Marsh, what happens next? Because, you know, these are two sackings in two big European leagues, that he deals with. Personally, I am predisposed to not liking him because you know why.
Yeah.
Because he went to Princeton.
Not for footballing reasons.
For footballing reasons. I thought they played decent football. I thought they were onto something good, and I thought it could have been effective. And I think to some degree they've been unlucky. I haven't looked at the analytics to see if they support this.
No,
I don't think they were down. He seemed at the end to suggest that, you know, he needs to do a better job, and maybe the players weren't getting his message or whatever. Is that what
happened? I think the injuries have hit them at key moments and key players. Certainly, I still think that defensively they had too many problems, and I do think that. That was a problem that he never managed to rectify and never managed to make them more solid. And then going forward, I like a lot of the press and the counter-pressing and the intensity and all the running, and they did miss some chances, but there were games where they played really well, and there were other games where they were not good at all. And I think that inconsistency, if it was my club, if I was the owner, I would really struggle with, because I do think that it's also... The problem lies in the manager then. If you can't get your team consistently playing either the same way or as well as they should week in and week out, depending on who they face, it's a problem that lies with him. But the US national team is there for him. It's perfect. It's there for him. It's there if he wants it.
I don't think it is.
It's just there. They're looking for someone. It makes a lot of sense.
I don't think it's personally. I don't think it's the right move for him, and I don't think it's the right move for the U.S. national team.
And it'd be hard for him to find another club in the top five leagues for now, for sure. So it might not be a bad idea for the next few years to go there, do well, and then put his name back.
The 26th World Cup. If you screw that up, you're out.
But he can also not screw that up. He can go with the great generation.
I just think he's got room to grow before he goes there. And I think he's
Where then?
A smaller team in Germany or France or Italy. And then show that you can do this. You can play this way. You're not just the Red Bull guy. Moving on to the game itself. How special is Njonto?
Yeah, he was really good. And you can tell that he's grown in confidence. He's grown into knowing.
He's not just
league.
A little round guy who moves the ball and gets fouled, right?
No, I mean, he's technically very good. But I like his awareness in that game. He created a lot of problems for Diogo Dalot, who was coming back. I'm not really sure how wise he was from Ten Hag to... I think Wan-Bissaka was injured anyway, so he had to play Dalot. But I think Wan-Bissaka would have done a much better job than Dalot coming back from an injury and facing a Njonto that is full of confidence, who creates problems, who scored so early that after that, you know, he was like, yeah, let's keep doing this again and again and again. So
Wan-Bissaka might not have put in that cross for Rashford to head in.
Yeah,
so
true.
What you want to do is kind of like in the fly, like, you know, you put Wan-Bissaka and Dalot in the two things and you combine them and you hope that you get somebody with Wan-Bissaka's defensive prowess and Dalot's technical ability.
Yeah.
Although given United's luck of late, you'd probably get the reverse. So that's where you want to go.
Marcus Rashford again. I mean, 6 games in a row in the Premier League scoring Old Trafford for the first time since Wayne Rooney, I think in 2012.
That was a Weghorst goal too, by the way. Like, well, actually, because Jan told us he's not good in the air. But But that was some leap, perfectly timed header.
Great. Yeah, really good. Yeah, much better than anything Weghorst has done since he arrived at the club. So, you know.
Get me excited about Sancho. If Sancho returns to even 70% of what he was, Anthony watches the rest of the Premier League on television, yeah? Or from the bench?
Yeah.
Or do you play Rashford up front to accommodate. I would not disassemble the team to accommodate.
No, I agree with you everywhere. The thing is, Garnacho is more comfortable as a left winger, and so is Rashford, and so is Sancho. And I think Anthony might just keep his place just about because he's more comfortable on the right wing and the others are not. But you can play Rashford on the right. I'm just not sure if he would be as amazing as on the left. But maybe, I mean, we saw Garnacho and Rashford against Leeds, so it's not a problem. But with Sancho, I was going to ask you, I don't know what the next step is. It's probably still giving him more game time off the bench than starting him. I just fear that if you start him again too early and he has a game where he's still finding his feet, then that could knock his confidence down again. You see what I mean?
To be honest, given that Martial is clearly on the extended injury policy once again, and you don't want to play Weghorst every game because he doesn't have the build for it. There's some games it's not the right choice.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have to play Rashford through the middle. And that's how Garnacho, I don't know that Garnacho's played 90 minutes, maybe in some League Cup game, but you could see he lasts like an hour, which is fine. He's young. He's growing into it. So maybe it's a tag team, Garnacho, Sancho on the left and Rashford through the middle, which, isn't bad. But
No.
What struck me about how short they were and how short they are is at the end, it looked to me like Lindelof. I mean, you couldn't tell it was the end of the game. It was all chaotic. But Lindelof came on to play in midfield.
Yeah, which he's played a little bit before. But otherwise, Maino, the kid from the academy, who's played in the League Cup or in the FA Cup or both.
Cobby?
Yeah. But then again, that is
But he's not really a defender. Isn't he more of like an all-round midfielder than a defensive specialist?
Midfielder, yeah.
So he's like a little Casemiro?
Yeah, but okay. Obviously not the level. So no, you're right. It's a big
just issue. only what, two games to go for Casemiro. So
yeah,
whatever. The cavalry is on its way. In terms of United fans getting their wish and seeing the back of the Glazer.
Yeah, they're getting excited by the Qatari money and all of that. Like, starting to think, who could we buy with the hundreds of millions they're going to bring?
All right. So let's pour some water on this, okay? First of all, this is a more general thing about super rich, fun, Qatari, blah, 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 right? I think where they can have a serious impact on Manchester United will still be bound by financial fair play. So let's not think that they're going to come in and they're going to spend $350 million on Mbappe and whatever else, because it's only going to happen if they can keep within the boundaries of
financial fair play. Yeah, but Chelsea did it, so maybe United can.
Yeah, I don't think Chelsea spent $350 million on Mbappe.
But if you spend $350 million on 10 players or one player, it's still $350 million.
True. Where they can make a serious impact is, every time we talk to Mark Ogden, he gets all grim and depressing.
Even when we don't speak.
Regardless of what we talk. Like, yeah. No, but about how like Old Trafford, the roof is leaking.
Which is true.
So these are massive investments in infrastructure that you can make that will increase revenue at your club and which don't count against financial fair play.
That's right.
And I think that is a big impact somebody like the Qataris could have.
Yeah.
The other big thing is they're not going to take money out of the club in dividends, we think.
We think.
We don't know.
We think.
On the flip side, you're going to have a serious problem, or you should have a very serious problem. This comes with a big asterisk because of Nasser Al-Khelaifi. Sorry. So the UEFA rules basically say you can't have two clubs with people with owners in the same European competition if they have the same owner or if there are certain links. Now, those rules, and the person who wrote those rules, who used to work at UEFA, told me this himself, said are not well written, and he wrote those rules. There was a massive fudge with Leipzig and Salzburg where officially there's a sponsorship deal, but there isn't. You should make this priority a number one to have very, very clear rules on this, because they can't go and pretend that this is online. This is some Qatari guy who won the lottery and then moved to another country and then became a billionaire. It's very difficult for you to be a Qatari businessman and you don't do any business with the Qatari government.
Yeah.
You're not related. There's only 300,000 Qataris, as we know.
Yeah.
And the Qatari royal family is enormous.
it's really difficult to maintain that distance. And like to maintain the distance for real, not in some legal BS separate entity thing, which we saw with
another company.
With Newcastle and PIF, right? Yeah. So the question though is this something UEFA would crack down on, given the role that Nasser has at UEFA right now, at the ECA? And will that role continue? Will Qatar continue to stay relevant? We've talked about this too, right? Now they've had the World Cup come and gone. These are big questions. I can tell you it becomes very, very problematic if other clubs want to make a stink about this for Nasser. It's already going to be problematic with financial fair play, and we'll see if that goes, because
I agree.
You know, especially if City get punished over here, and they may or may not. This is something, UEFA's credibility is at stake. UEFA's faith in institutions is at stake. They have to be seen to address this in the correct way. All that said, if the Glazers want 5 to 6 billion, I believe 4.1 to 4.5 is less than 5 to 6 billion.
Yeah.
It's less than the 5 billion Sir Jim, your friend Sir Jim in the south of France, is talking about. So why are we talking about this if the other dude's offering more?
Is it because they want 6 billion, but are happy to settle for 5.
But then why not just sell it to Sir Jim?
Yeah, but maybe they might be tempted at some point to, once they see the bid, the full bid is there, if Sir Jim has made the bid and, you know, all of that is there.
Well, he's written a letter. I don't know. I was thinking of writing a letter as well to Rain and, you know, offering 7 billion to see if that bids up the price. Maybe it could manipulate the stock price. You know, their shares went up 17% when the Qataris came out, right?
Yeah.
So imagine, do you think I could move it? If I wrote to them and said, I'm ready to offer 7 billion, right? Yeah. There you go. Securities fraud.
I don't know. I think this should still be an exciting time if you're United fans. Things are moving. At least they're moving. Even if
they're
just
moving
take
on the pitch and with Ten Hag, undoubtedly.
And off the pitch as well. Even if they just take minority investment, you know, shareholder, whatever. But at least something is moving. There's people interested in the club to pay a lot of money for it. 6 billion, I'm not so sure. So I think you're right to be excited if you're a United fan, man.
Yeah, I think it's good. And I also think from United's perspective, I know it's easy to say, but under Rangnick or under Solskjaer towards the end, if they go 2 goals down at home and they have big pieces missing, like, I mean, we're talking, what, 5 starters missing if you add them all up, right? Martial, Casemiro, Antony, Eriksen. I don't think they get back into the game. I really don't, especially after the first half, where other than Garnacho chances and that Sabitzer shot, they took a lot of shots, but in terms of real things, they didn't produce much.
Yeah, but in the second half, it felt like they were going to win the game.
But that's encouraging. But so that's what I'm saying is, if Bruno Fernandes says it's 2 points dropped, sure, but think of where you were, think of where you are, and you're 2 points behind City now. Yeah. And not a lot of people, including us, would have taken that for granted, back in September, October. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough United, enough Qataris. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Real Madrid are through to the FIFA Club World Cup final as they beat Al Ahly 4-1. Jules, there was a point in the second half where things could have gone very differently.
Yeah, even in the first half, Gab, I thought, to be fair, Al Ahly played really, really well. They had intensity, they moved the ball well, they were a threat on the right wing, especially Camavinga playing again as left back.
Camavinga had an atrocious
But he did keep well before, to the point that in Madrid they were thinking, oh, maybe this is his best position, actually.
But in this game, against that dude, he's not good.
Al-Shaati was really, who was very good, who got the penalty that Camavinga, when Camavinga fouled him. But I thought it was a really good game. And yeah, they scored two goals in garbage time, as you like to say. Real Madrid to make it 4-1. Modric missed a penalty and I thought was really bad again since the World Cup restart. He's been really poor. But they got the job done and now they can look forward to a final, which, by the way, is not going to be easy for them.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I thought Real Madrid were actually really good in the first half and maybe could have...
Yeah, but apart from Rodrigo and Vini, like, do you see what I mean?
But Rodrigo, that little dance, come on, man.
That was great when he hit the post.
And they don't have Karim Benzema, there's no Courtois. There's a lot of big guns missing.
True. And Real Madrid will face Saudi Arabia's Al-Hilal in the final after they won their other semi-final. Their semi-final against Flamengo 3-2. Should we be considering this a big upset, considering how usually the South American champions make it to the final?
I think it is a big upset. Because, well, first of all, Al-Hilal are not the most famous team in Saudi Arabia right now because Al Nassr signed somebody fairly well known. No, some people have made this argument because I think it's happened five times in the last 10 years.
I think Hashim Antlers were the last two not South Americans to qualify.
That said, Flamengo are a super club. Flamengo has spent a lot of money. They have a great team. Yeah. They have a lot of big name players. They are a powerhouse. They're not somebody who won the Copa Libertadores last year, sold everybody to Europe, and now they're, and they've been dominant for a while. So I think Flamengo made things much worse for themselves. It was an absolutely horrendous defending. Gerson getting himself stupidly sent off. Shout out though to Salem Al-Dessari. Remember?
Yeah, of course. The two penalties,
that amazing goal, converts the penalties. Well done, Al-Hilal. You know, in the end, 90 minutes.
Who have really good players.
Happens.
Players that have played in Europe before. Vieto, Marega.
I think it's six or seven in the starting lineup.
Yeah,
so there's, you know.
It's a good team, too.
So is that what makes you think that Real Madrid should not take this game for granted?
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be really good.
Tune in if you can, if you're fortunate enough to live in a country where somebody got the lights. If not, it's
neither
on
you
can. Never mind, it's on FIFA Plus.
FIFA Plus, yeah, you can stream in it.
Back to Real Madrid, where La Liga have passed evidence to police documenting the racist abuse Vinicius was subjected to at Mallorca. Jules, it's the sixth time that this has happened. I want to give you on this. People go and blame the league, but what more can the league actually do at this stage other than pass the information to the police and local authorities and say, this is a crime, prosecute?
Yeah, that's all they can do. It's all done then to the region and the provincial, like, law system, if you want, or policing system to deal with it. And sometimes they feel they don't really want to. They don't want to go after the fans of the clubs from the region. Sometimes it looks like other clubs don't really want to either, Gab, you know? And the problem is, if this is the only way, then it would happen a seventh time and an eighth time and a ninth time. And because now it seems that everybody's doing it. Everybody, every time Real Madrid is in town, Vinicius is in town, they prepare stuff. They racially abuse him on the pitch. They kick him all around the time. It's just like, this is not
I think there's two separate elements to this. It is true that Vinicius is a marked man and he's targeted. But I think we also need to separate the trying to wind up Vinicius, trying to foul him, going to the limits and going over it, which I think is problematic. And I think he deserves more protections from referee, which can be a tactic, right? To try to unsettle somebody that way. And racially abusing people. That is never okay. That should always be punished. My understanding is that in the Mallorca game, people are kind of conflating the two. And that it was very audible, but it was not a lot of people. So I would look at this and say, Mallorca, you've got your fans there, you've got witnesses, you've got CCTV. This is your chance. Identify this dude, work with the police, and say you're not stepping foot in the stadium again.
Yeah.
Simple as.
Yeah. Juventus beat Salernitana away 3-0 on Tuesday night. I think it was at Dusan Vlahovic backs two goals. Gab, your thoughts?
I think it's great if you're a Juve fan that Vlahovic is back and scoring. He is, you know, your biggest attacking asset. Kostic doing reasonably as well after being basically terrible after the World Cup. Di Maria looking good too. It's good. It's 3 points. It moves the table. You need to get this all just Allegri nonsense about relegation out of your head and just focus on things going forward. Manchester City have said they welcome the chance to clear their name after being charged with 115 breaches, mostly due to financial irregularities by the Premier League. It's a charge, of course, which, as we know, could see them docked a whole bunch of points, fined, maybe even expelled from the league. Jules, I can't resist the chance to be a little bit cynical here.
I know.
If they welcome the chance to clear their name and have overwhelming and irrefutable evidence of their innocence, why did they go to court twice to stop it? And why don't they just share all this information?
Exactly, Gab. And it's a bit what we said already on Monday. Like, you know, they didn't give all the documents and the information that the Premier League wanted during the investigation until they were forced to do so. And even after that, they were very, very reluctant. And if you've got nothing, if you do nothing wrong, nothing to be, you know, to reproach yourself or anything like that, then you give everything. And the fact that they didn't want to give anything is not a good look. Like you said, like the fact that they tried twice to stop that investigation, going into court. Now, let's see. I mean, let's see. I thought their statement after was quite punchy in the sense like, yeah, great. You know, we can't wait for this to be all over because we did nothing wrong and move on then.
Yeah, so I'm sure they won't do anything to delay it.
Exactly. And we love our conspiracy in football, Gab, of course. Some folks are saying that after investigating City for more than 4 years, the Premier League only brought these charges at that moment, so on Monday morning, because the government will soon decide whether the game should have an independent regulator or not. So like white paper about the governance of English football. What's the thinking there? And is there a point there?
So this is a popular theory. I mean, first, for those who don't know what an independent regulator is, the idea is that the government would come out and decide, no, Premier League, you're not just, you know, a business organization, like say the NFL might be in the US, you are some sort of social good. So we're going to appoint somebody, an independent regulator, who will have powers to control you on major issues in the same way that, for example, I mean, they have these in other countries too, for example, your electrical grid, or for example, the water company, right? Where you've got private companies, but then you've got some government guy who says, okay, these are minimum standards, minimum requirements. You can't change things this way and that. Premier League does not want that. They don't want to be controlled that way.
Yeah.
But one of the big arguments is, hey, Premier League, you are 20 clubs. Can 20 clubs police themselves? Which is why a lot of people in favor of regulator. Personally, I am too. It's not just Manchester. I don't like sovereign wealth funds owning clubs, largely because sovereign wealth funds should be responsible to look after the wealth of the people of that country, not necessarily going into football. That's why good, well-run countries like Norway, for example, as we know, despite we tried to get Jan to get the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is bigger than PIF and bigger than the Qatari one, to buy Manchester United, that's not going to happen.
No.
So I can understand this, right? Wolves, of course, another problematic issue with their owners' ties to agents and George Mendes. But the thing here is, the logic is that, we're showing the government that, no, we are active, right? After 4 years sitting their backside. Whether it's true or not, this doesn't change the fact. They need to establish the facts of what happened. And the other point in all this, and some City fans have raised it, and I think they have a very valid point. This is not a sports case. This is a complex financial accounting case. And so they're looking at this and say, well, you're appointing a three-man panel. Only one needs to be a lawyer on the panel. How do we know we're going to get justice? Shouldn't we have a more specialized court with people who are actually experts in this? I think that is a valid argument.
That's a fair point. Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, because it's not a sports case, I wish people on all sides, whether City fans or fans of other clubs, don't cheer for this as if you were cheering for your team in the stadium, because it's not. It's got nothing to do with sports.
Yeah.
This is a case about potential accounting fraud. Yeah. That's all it is.
Yeah.
No trouble for Paris Saint-Germain this season, Jules. They were dumped out of the Coupe de France by Marseille 2-1. And from the highlights I saw, and I only got to see highlights because I wasn't allowed to watch the game in this country, Marseille played really, really well and created a million chances.
Yeah, they were the better team by far as well. Well done to them. Really, Gattuso this time got everything right, from his starting 11 to the tactics to the Rongier position at the back, everything. And the best team won and deserved to go through. It was the first time at the Velodrome that Marseille beat PSG in almost 12 years. So it was long due. It was facilitated by the atrocious performance collectively from PSG.
Neymar and Messi up front.
Sorry?
Neymar and Messi up front.
Yeah, Neymar and Messi up front and Vitinha. It's not even that. Yeah, you could. I think Galtier should have started Ekitike up front. But everything was from the formation, the tactics, the spirit of the team, no cohesion, just nothing. I find it so worrying. And you know what? You said no trouble. They won't be a double. They won't win the Champions League playing like this. And they won't win the Champions League full stop unless something crazy happens. Because right now, Galtier is not good enough and the team is not playing well enough. He's not good enough. So, and sticking with PSG, Lionel Messi will, of course, be a free agent in June. And Luis Campos revealed that they're talking for that new deal at Paris for him to stay. And his brother, Messi's brother, Matias, said on Twitch last night that if he returns to Barcelona, he's getting rid of Joan Laporta. I mean, he said loads of things. Like, he's also said that Messi will never go back to Barcelona, that nobody knew Barcelona before Messi arrived at the club. There was no history before. It's not a really good look for the Messi family.
It's one of those curses, right? You can't change your family and everybody's got some unhinged family members. I think, you know, Messi has kind of distanced themselves from the hell Matias wants to say. Yeah. And I think we've said enough about Matias, unless he can play football like his brother, which I'm assuming he can't.
Yeah, he can't.
Jules, I know how highly you rate Ronald Koeman's opinions. He says Cody Gakpo joined Liverpool too early. This is the same Cody Gakpo who turns 24 in May.
That's right, yeah. The Dutch guy who's now obviously the national team head coach going on a show in the Netherlands to say it was a mistake for him to go to Liverpool on the back of, 6 games now he's played. And yeah, of course, he has no goals, no assists.
Because he's too young.
Because he's too early. Yeah, when was the good time? He waits until he's 31 and see who wants to take him.
It works for Val Big Horse at United, you know.
You know what I think about this guy. Nicolò Zaniolo to Galatasaray is official, Gab. And there is an interesting structure to the deal. Tell us.
Did we talk about the financialization of football? I thought this was fascinating. So Galatasaray are paying 16.6 million. Then they've got 6.5 million in easy bonuses, basically just getting paid to show up. And that's, I guess, so protect him against Zaniolo getting injured or, you know, going rogue.
Yeah, yeah.
6.5 million in difficult bonuses, like, I suppose, Galatasaray winning things and Zaniolo scoring 20 goals. And then, if he sold for more than 20 million, they have to kick in another 2 million. And then on top of that, there's a 20% on the sell-on profit if he sold for more than what what they paid for Zaniolo. And on top of all that, Zaniolo has a 35 million euro release clause.
Okay.
It's
not a really good deal for Galatasaray, though, is it?
It's a good deal for Roma.
For Galatasaray, if all the bonuses are triggered and they only sell him for 35 and have to give 20% of basically the 20 million profit.
Yeah, but maybe they extend his contract, take the clause out, and then sell him for 100 million to Paris Saint-Germain.
Not so sure for Zaniolo either. But
Hugo Lloris is injured and could miss up to 8 weeks, Jules. Not good news for Antonio Conte as he returns after his surgery.
Yeah, he will open the door coming back. It's Fraser Foster who's there.
I know. He'll go from looking down to the little man to the very big man.
Where's my captain? No captain for Conte. And he's going to miss big games, of course. The Milan games in the Champions League, there's the FA Cup, there's the league where they're obviously fighting to finish up four. So really bad timing for the injury, and we wish Hugo a quick recovery, of course. Borussia Dortmund win away to Bochum to advance in the German Cup. But Gab, how about that Emre Can goal?
Special. Emre Can from the halfway line. We know he has it in his locker.
Very special.
So sweet. Also, nice to see Marco Reus scores. Reports in Spain suggest Real Madrid are willing to extend Luka Modric's deal, but only if he retires from international duty. Does that seem fair to you, Jules?
In a way, it is fair. I think it's hard to impose people. Okay, you want to stay here? You have to give up the national team. I think it's hard, especially someone who's such a legend at the club. But you can understand that at his age now, physically, it starts to be very difficult. And play international football and domestic football could be maybe too much. Gab, who is Ciro Santoriello? And why has he made Juventus fans so angry?
So he's one of the prosecutors in the Prisma case, which is the criminal case against Juventus. A video went viral of him which surfaced from a 2018 press conference where he talks about his role as a magistrate. And he says, I'm a Napoli fan and I absolutely hate Juventus.
No way.
Now, in context, and I absolutely hate Juventus, but I had to let them off when I was investigating in 2016 because what they did was not a crime. So he wanted to show that he was being impartial. There's laughter in the room, he's joking. But you cannot say these things. You've said these things, you cannot be appointed. You should recuse yourself from the case. Seems obvious to me.
Yeah.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
see who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
In a similar vein, Jules, Murray Rosen, the man who will appoint the independent commission that will judge the Manchester City case, is, drumroll, an Arsenal club member. Should City be annoyed by this?
I don't think so. So we don't know what kind of, I mean, there's a red membership is called for Arsenal where everybody can join for £34 a season, where you basically, it's easier for you if you want to try to buy some tickets to go and watch the team. So I suspect he's an Arsenal fan, yeah. But if he was to appoint himself, which he can do, on the commission, then okay. If I was just like, come on, that's not wise.
You think you should stop him from being a member of the commission?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I don't think he would have appointed himself on the commission either. But if he does, yeah, I can see what City have a point. If he doesn't, I really don't think that this is a big issue here. Yeah.
No, I think I actually looked at his profile. It's kind of funny because it says he's obviously really interested in sports.
Okay.
He's a member of the MCC, which is the
Middlesex Cricket.
Yeah, so he's obviously a cricket fan.
Yeah.
He's an Arsenal club member. Presumably he's an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
He also enjoys playing real tennis, the sports of kings.
Oh, real tennis? You know, yeah, jeu de pomme in French.
With a crappy little rackets. Yeah, yeah, and like, yeah. I don't know. To me, it's more like,
history,
why you
then.
What?
History. But,
here's what you run into a problem, right? And we touched upon this before, saying this is not a sports story, it's a business and rule story. There's an argument to be made that obviously, you know, he's the head of the Premier League's disciplinary panel, Judiciary committee, whatever it's called, right? People who are going to have some knowledge of this are going to be football fans, right? You're not going to find people who've never heard of Manchester City.
And in this country, everybody has a team. Do you know what I mean? Like, so.
Well, most people, some very posh people don't.
Maybe.
But the point is, there's a trade-off, right? So I think you have to. What matters is that he enforces and he appoints people who will enforce and apply the law in a way that people understand and is fair. I think everybody has a past and everybody has a preference. This guy obviously feels confident enough to write it on his official profile at his legal chambers.
Exactly.
So that says he's got nothing to hide. So yeah. I don't think City will raise this point, and I don't think City fans should either, frankly.
Yeah, I agree. Bayern have confirmed that they are paying zero in loan fees for Joao Cancelo. I suspect you like this deal even more. I mean, every show we've had a quick hit about Joao Cancelo's loan to Bayern.
I love Cancelo. Like, yeah, I know you do. Why I love him? Because I loved Andre Kanchelskis. Cancelo, Kanchelskis. You know, I like Cancellieri as well.
No.
Like, there's something about it.
Okay.
No, look. No downside. No downside. Try before you buy. And I think what it speaks to, again, is how badly Pep wanted him gone.
Yeah.
At least it's just
okay, because you seem to struggle with the fact that City didn't want him there anymore. It's okay. Like, sometimes
I struggle with it because he's a good player.
I know he's a good player, but sometimes your manager doesn't want you to be there. You move on to somewhere where you're welcomed and valued, which was not the case anymore at City.
If I were your boy Pavard, I'd be packing my bags here.
Yeah, or you can play center back, maybe in the
Eintracht Frankfurt are through in the German Cup, beating Darmstadt 4-2. And your boy Randall Colum won. Oh, he cannot stop squeezing them.
Yeah, Paris born and bred, of course. That's why, you know, he's so good. Unreal season. Because when he moved from Nantes to Frankfurt for nothing in the summer, we all said great deal for Frankfurt. I mean, although there was a lot of Frankfurt fans who'd never heard of him. And we were saying, like, this is a really good player on a free. He's brilliant. But I don't think he thought that his season would be that good. And on top of that, the World Cup. And now he's an international player. His stock is rising and rising and rising. And so is his price. I don't know what he's going to do in the summer. I think he'd be very happy to stay, especially if Frankfurt are still in the Champions League next season or maybe even the Europa League. I think he'd be very happy to move and take a step up again in a bigger club. But what an incredible season.
Second greatest male athlete named Randall in history?
After
Randall Cunningham, obviously.
Okay, yeah. Does Julius Randall, the New York Knicks basketball player, count?
Is he better than Colin Moani? Because he's sure.
Oh, Julius Randall is an all-star, so yeah.
Yeah, but he's not as good as Randall Cunningham, the ultimate weapon. Anyway, we move on.
Yeah, South Africa's tourist board, remember we told you that story in the last show, have scrapped their proposed sponsorship of Tottenham.
But
happy?
I think it's what people want. Like I said, we're not in a position to decide whether this will bring more money or less money to South Africa, but it's yep. clearly that there's enough local opposition that said, no, spend this money in this country. We're South Africa. People know we got lots of spectacular yep. scenery, nice beaches, the little penguins or puffins in that little beach near Cape Town. Oh, we got safaris. People know who we are. We're not Rwanda
That's
here.
True. That's true.
Lyon beat Lille and advance in the French Cup. Jules, are they the favorites now along with Marseille?
Yeah, they are. Gab, of course, quarterfinalist. Now we don't know the draw yet. It'd be very interesting to see. The last game is today, I think, Lens against Lorient tonight on Thursday night. And then we will know. It should be very exciting quarterfinals. There's teams from the second division like Rodez, like Annecy, who've qualified. There's still some big boys from Ligue 1, of course. And Lyon, if they win the cup, will qualify for the Europa League, which right now is the only way, really, unless there's a miracle, that they can qualify for Europe. So huge for them. Marseille will qualify for the Champions League. But for Lyon, it's either the cup or nothing, pretty much. So.
That's what got me thinking about, because Lens, I'm assuming, they still have a legit shot at the Champions League. And
otherwise, the Europa League, it would be anyway. But
So it seems like, you know, this is a motivated team and they've got a lot of talent.
Yeah, definitely. Rino Matarazzo is back in the Bundesliga, taking over at Hoffenheim. Gab is your friend, so you must be very happy.
Yeah, well, I think most of all, I think it shows that the equilibrium of the universe has remained balanced, because there must always be at least one American Ivy League educated coach in a Big Five league, right?
Yeah.
Jesse Marsh goes out. Yeah. At the same time, God decrees that Rino Matarazzo comes in at Hoffenheim.
Yeah.
Seems fair. No, look, seriously. I thought, you know, he almost came out of the blue at Stuttgart, did really well getting him promoted. Then afterwards, turnover, things don't work out. I think it's great that he gets another shot. He certainly knows the league. And I think he's been at Hoffenheim before, years
maybe
ago.
Maybe in the youth teams now or something like that. An assistant to...
I think it's in Nagelsmann many years ago.
That rings a bell.
Tigres manager Diego Coca is a favorite to take over as Mexico boss. ESPN, our colleagues in ESPN Mexico reporting it's just about done.
Yeah.
It's not an easy job.
It's not, especially
on the back of... It doesn't seem like a fun job either.
It's not fun. I mean, the pressure is huge. And when you come on the back of Tata Martino, let's say poor tenure, let's put it that way, it's a big job. But Diego Coca knows Mexican football really well. He's done extremely well with Atlas, of course. And you can see also why it's a very appealing job, because if you do well, on the other hand, if you sort out the problems, if you make that team play well, then you become a hero and you become a legend. And then I think it's very rewarding, especially with the World Cup at home, of kind of like a third at home in 2026. So, you know, good luck to him.
Yeah, not a great generation, perhaps, of Mexican players compared to the past. Yeah. But, you know, there's, of course, that track record of Argentines, you know, Tata Martino, La Volpe before that.
Exactly. Meanwhile, Gab, Carlos Queiroz is the new national team coach of Qatar. Are you surprised?
Nothing this man does surprises me. Obviously, he's worked in the Gulf before. He's worked all over the place. You know, the rebuild after the pretty horrendous World Cup they had. He was at the World Cup with Iran. He clearly likes those sorts of challenges, and good luck to him. He's a good guy. Barcelona are very close to extending Sergio Roberto's contract for another season. Is this a good move, Jules?
Really? Why?
I'm assuming he took a big pay cut.
I hope so, please. Like, you know.
Jules, I'm sorry.
He's a buddy. He's a squad player, before you go.
He loves the club.
He loves the club. Okay. He's not a very good player, but it's okay. I just don't want him to start.
But I think the thing with Barcelona is, okay, we need somebody to occasionally play right back, right? Because Jules Koundé is not a real right back.
Yeah.
Balde's really good, but he can't play left back and right back at the same time. He's not that good. Bellerin's gone and will never return. This dude, also not a right back, but has played right back.
Yeah.
I think they look at it and they say, how much will it cost us to get a right back versus...
Don't you have a right back in your amazing academy that can come in instead of keeping him again?
Evidently not. You know what? Gavi could play right back and probably do a better job than these guys, but whatever.
Talking of extensions, Gab, are Milan really looking to give my boy, Olivier Giroud, another season and maybe even a second one in option?
Whoa, he's only... I think Milan's like track record with very, very old strikers.
Yeah.
It's been pretty good. And by the way, this story breaks just as Zlatan's like, I'm ready to return to save the club. You know, I think if the money's right, but he can't be your starter. He cannot be your starter. You need to figure out, you need to get somebody to take Divock Origi far away, I think.
Yeah.
You need to figure out if Leao goes, take the Leao money, have somebody who can play up front, and Giroud can be a situational player. It's not fair to him and his beautiful sculpted body that he has to go out and play every minute of every game.
I agree.
Hatayspor midfielder Christian Atsu is still missing following the earthquakes that struck Turkey and Syria. By the way, our thoughts go out to everybody affected. Horrific death toll, lots of disruption. It's not looking good.
No, it's not looking good, Gab. We're waiting for some news. We thought in the last few days, few hours, that they found him and that he was in hospital recovering. Suddenly there was, I think, mixed message from the club and people around him, all that kind of stuff. It turns out that, no, they don't know where he is. So he will still be in all the rubbles and everything, which is obviously really worrying. Thousands, I think over 10,000 now of people have died in these incredible earthquakes in the two countries. So it's terrible scenes if you've seen the footage. And let's just hope that Christian Atsu and everybody else who could still have their lives saved will be found and will be safe. A22, you know, the company that is behind the Super League, have released their 10 principles for a European Football League. What is this, Gav?
Okay, so like you said, like this is the company that's still being financed by, we think, Juventus, Real Madrid, and Barcelona.
Yeah.
Probably the other clubs too, secretly, somehow, just in case they had your bet. But they say, no, we've learned our lessons, we're merit-based. They say that they've spoken to stakeholders all around Europe, and they said, we've got 10 principles here for running a European Football League. And I just received the press release, which is why I'm going to look at my phone now very politely. Jules, you tell me if this sounds reasonable to you, right? You're going to have broad-based and meritocratic competition. So basically, a competition for 60 to 80 teams split into three divisions, and you need to qualify for it annually. Is that a revolutionary idea?
No.
No, it's kind of what we have now, except there's more participants now, right?
Yeah.
Domestic tournaments are the foundation of football, and they clubs have to remain fully committed to their domestic tournaments, right?
Okay.
That's kind of what UEFA have been saying all along.
Yeah.
You need to have financial sustainability and safeguards to improve competitiveness with stable and sustainable resources.
Okay.
Like FFP. You okay with that?
Yeah.
No problem with that? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm waiting for something a bit different than what we already have.
Oh, sorry. But one of the ways you can achieve that, sorry, this is the fine print, that clubs playing should have a minimum of 14 guaranteed European games. Right now, the minimum guaranteed is 2 if you go out and qualifying, and it's 6 if you play in the group stage. So they want 14.
Okay.
Does that sound like a lot?
At least 14 for every single team that is in that competition. Yeah. So between 60 and 80 teams.
Yep.
Okay.
That is a ton of games.
That is a ton of games.
At the same time, player health must be at the center of the game.
Yeah, of course. More games.
They want club run competitions. Okay, we know that.
Okay.
You don't like sharing. They want to create the world's best football competition.
Okay.
But I'm not going to disagree with that.
Yeah.
They want an improved fan experience.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
They want to develop and finance women's football.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'd be shocked if that wasn't there. And they want to increase the amount of solidarity payments, which is the amount of money that they pay to the rest of the football pyramid who's not involved. A minimum of 400 million a year, which is about twice what UEFA pay now. But one big caveat, UEFA's also distribute money to all the teams that try to qualify. And I think it's like 250, if you can count the ones that go into qualifying in the early stages for the three competitions. So obviously there's only 200 million left over.
Yeah.
Obviously you'd have fewer teams. So this is a bit naughty here.
Yeah.
And also they want to respect European Union law and values, right? I got no issue with that. Right?
Yeah. Good luck with that.
So in this whole thing, it sounds to me, other than the fact that you want fewer teams in the competition, but more games for everybody.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like this is UEFA talking.
Yeah. It sounds exactly the same.
I don't understand what the. It's just you want to run it and you want to decide how. Who
yeah,
gets the
exactly.
Money,
yeah. Right? And you want the money to be distributed differently, maybe.
I mean, like, I'm all for the PR offensive and stuff, yeah. But like, you're not even differentiating yourself anymore, right? I know. Whatever. Legendary Croatia coach Miroslav Blažević has passed away, Jules. He is best known for taking Croatia to the 1996 Euro quarterfinal
yeah.
and the 98 World Cup semifinal. That was those great teams.
Of course.
Suker and Slaven Bilic yeah. and goodness knows who else.
Yeah. Yeah. Really sad 2 days before his 88th birthday. Gav, he'd been ill. He had cancer, I think, for the last 10 years or so. Of course, iconic for that competition. He was wearing, if you remember, if you're of that generation, like a police hat or an army hat, because he was touched. He coached in France. He was speaking French really well. And if you remember, in the 98 World Cup, there was a problem with at the Serbia-Germany game where Commandant Nivelle, one of the a French policemen, was attacked by some fans and lost his life. And was in the coma for many, many months and weeks. And to pay him tribute, Blažević wore the hat. And in the hat, he had a photo of Virgin Mary that he says that kept them good luck all through that tournament, that they finished third, of course. So, yeah, very special character, great coach who won in a lot of the countries that he coached. So really sad day in Croatian football history, I think. Argentina, Uruguay, Chile and Paraguay have submitted their official joint bid for the 2030 World Cup. And according to reports, Gab, Saudi Arabia have offered to build and pay for the stadiums that their co-host Greece and Egypt will use and will have to be to build in their tricontinental bid as well, if they go and also submit a bid for the three of them. So Saudi Arabia said to Greece and Egypt, hey guys, come with us on the bid. But you know what? We build the stadiums that, yeah. you know, you need to build for the bid.
And we get to host three quarters of the games as well. So there were rumblings they would do this. I believe, I hope I love to give credit to the people who come up with the story. I believe it was Politico who first reported this story. So it's not yeah. even like a football story. It may have been somebody else. I that's where I saw it. Why don't we just buy Greece and Egypt, right? I mean, honestly, think about it, right? You want to develop tourism? Like, you're going to, there's just so much museum quality stuff in Greece and
yeah,
Egypt. I mean, it's literally, you know, the two of the three greatest founding celebrations civilizations in Europe and North Africa. Why not? This is odd to me. Again, I don't think they have a shot at getting it so close after 2022 in Qatar. Yeah. I think there are principles about spreading it around. It's also true. Greece certainly can't host a World Cup on their own.
Nope.
Egypt would probably struggle to do it as well. Yeah. A bigger country. So, you know, it's normally have joint bids. To me, I find this a little bit depressing, unnecessary, overstretching.
It's not really the idea, yeah.
I get it. You know, MBS says, oh, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right? So let me go and take a shot here and accelerate my vision for the country, blah, blah, blah. I think this is going to be a really tough sell. And remember, too, like, you know, Greece won't have the backing of UEFA, because I think UEFA are going to back the Spain-Portugal bid.
Yeah.
I think a lot of neutrals say you got to go 2030, time for it to return to Argentina. I'm sorry, to
Uruguay,
Argentina,
yeah. Uruguay, I mean, to South America,
and especially
yeah.
Uruguay, because obviously later, 100 yeah. years after. I mean, if they have an Argentina, the final has to be. We agree, Montevideo, right? There's no other place the final can be. So, it's political. I think people are going to vote in this. I really hope this does not come down to who chucks the most money at it.
Yeah, I agree.
The Wrexham dream is over as they pay a dear price for a missed penalty against Sheffield United in the FA Cup replay. Jules, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that it was a great game, and I thought they made their fans, the players, everybody involved at the club, their owners, of course, very proud, because they played really well considering there's 72 places, I think, between the two teams in the English like football pyramid, if you want. They were outstanding, and if Paul Mullin scores that penalty with 15 minutes to go and they go 2-1 up, they might well have qualified and will be getting ready to face Spurs. In the end, it was not meant for them. He missed that pen. He had already scored one against the same goalkeeper. Missed that one, like Harry Kane style, if you want. And after that, in the end, Sheffield United and Billy Sharp, who, by the way, was very disappointed in his post-match interview, basically having a go at the Wrexham players and saying that they were disrespectful. That was really unnecessary from Billy Sharp. And you know what? The priority for Wrexham is going up in League Two anyway. It's not the FA Cup. Right. Yeah, it would have been great to face Spurs. A great story for, again, the owners and the fans and the community. But the most important right now is to focus on the league. They're well positioned to go up. So
I think the Wrexham social media account tweeted something about facing Tottenham Hotspur or implying that they were.
I mean, come on. Billy Sharp knows better than that. He's experienced enough. Come on.
I mean, Billy Sharp, by the way, I find him generally to be a very likable character. I think he's put himself down a little bit.
He's the story of his life. He's
that said, but 72 places, you could totally tell in that first half, like Sheffield United felt like they took a million shots on goal and the finishing was terrible. So, probably football-wise, probably the right result.
Yeah. Ronaldinho's son, João Mendes, has joined Barcelona's academy. He's 17. Gab, it's a tough act to follow.
It is. And look, I'm not being funny. I don't know this kid's story and everything. I think unless, you know, your last name is Lampard or Maldini, there aren't very many occasions where you are the son of a legend and you become a legend yourself.
Yeah.
I do wonder, the dude's 17. It's not like he's like 12. He's 17. You know, there was suggestions about him training with the first team, blah, blah, blah. I just hope if he's good enough, he gets to play and doesn't. And, you know, I mean, I think it's good that he's João Mendes. So people maybe might not remember that he doesn't have that. Not that Ronaldinho is an actual last name, but, you know.
João Mendes Ronaldinho. Yeah, no, that's the
name. You know what I mean there. Jules, that brings us to an end. I won't be here on Monday because I'll be traveling back from somewhere. But I will leave you in the capable hands of Don. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.